Monday again? It's Monday again, Andrea Darlis.
I know. I can't believe it. Was it just Friday?
It was just Friday. And we have a lot of show to get to. The Sox fell to another tough game tonight. But you know what it was? It was Game of Thrones night at
the park. I wanted to go.
Do you watch Game of Thrones?
Wait, you too?
Love Game of Thrones.
You got to binge it. This is the last season.
You're right. You have to binge it. No. It is so good. But I tried that too. I was like, oh, I can't get into that. I'm not into this whole medieval.
It's awesome.
It's so good.
If you want to understand politics, watch the Game of Thrones.
And there's such strong female characters
in it too.
Yeah.
It's the bomb. Seriously.
It is.
I like that you're bonding. It's Reverend Livingston right. with us over Game of Thrones.
We're stereo right here.
We are.
Yeah, you. I've tried many times to watch the show. I just have never.
It takes a little, like, iced tea. You know, you get used to it, then it's good.
There you go. It's true.
So I need sugar? Is it like sweet tea?
It's like sweet tea.
Okay. Yeah.
But after you get into it, you'll love it.
I think so, too. Guaranteed. Give yourself, because I have to admit, the first episode I watched, I was like,
I didn't care for it.
Second, third, but by the third or fourth, I could not stop watching
there. And it's cold-blooded.
Ooh. It is. Violent, sex, there's a lot going on there.
It's a lot of mud. I watched one episode, there was a lot of snow and mud, and I just was out.
Yeah, because winter is coming.
Winter is coming.
It's a meme that I enjoy yet don't understand.
And it stars Mike Madigan.
Is that which character is Michael Madigan?
The Night King.
That's the bad king.
Yeah.
Did you say that's accurate?
I would agree. Yeah.
He even looks like him. He's just frozen.
Okay.
Well, Mike's frozen too.
So if I look at it through that lens, that will make more sense to me.
Oh, yeah. Just stay with it. We guarantee, right?
I agree.
You will become a fan out of this world.
You will. And then you'll have to watch all the seasons. I probably took 2-3 months to just watch it and just binge it. It was so good.
Okay. I did it on a weekend.
Did you?
Yeah.
Oh, I want to see what else you both watch. Do you also watch The Good Fight?
What's that?
Oh, he might like The Good Fight.
Oh, you will like that.
That's from the show.
Yeah, that's with Delroy Lindo and Christine Baranski.
Yeah.
Did you ever watch The Good Wife?
Yeah, a little bit, with Juliana.
Moore.
Yeah.
yeah
not
yeah.
Moore, is that right?
Margulies. Yeah.
Margulies,
but she's not in the spin. It's all the characters.
Spin-off,
and then the main one, Diane, joins this African-American law firm.
Right.
And it's very good. Isn't it, Patty? I got Patty onto it.
I used to love Damaged with Glenn Close. Did you ever watch that?
I like that, too.
That was awesome.
See, I knew you two would find it.
Damaged just... Glenn Close was just cold.
Oh, yes, she was.
I think you might like Good Fight, because not only is it the spinoff, and it's not on the air, so it's a streaming series, and it gets a little bit more graphic in both the content and the language.
But here's a great Netflix series for you. Well, I think it's for the BBC, but Peaky Blinders.
Every episode is the bomb. Esmeralda was the one that turned me on to Peaky Blinders.
It's the bomb.
What's the guy's name?
Three or four.
Killian Murphy.
Oh, that's doable. That's doable.
Peaky Blinders is the bomb.
The first episode
and the cinematography will capture you.
The music.
Yeah.
Oh.
I promise, though, I would. I have a week off at the end of the month. And
Handmaid Tale.
Yeah, I got it. Everyone's saying I got to watch that.
I tried watching it. I haven't got into
Patty
it yet.
Patty loves that one.
Love makes you think and makes you, you know, realize how close we are one way or the other when it comes to how we treat each other and what it means to live in fascism.
Is it scary?
It's a little scary. It's a little scary. And but see, I love this. I love that we're figuring out ways. Now, do you both find that you binge watch something to unwind from all, like, especially now more than ever?
I do.
I get my food together. I got my big chair. And I'm like, it's
me
on.
Too. Because think about it. We are, like, you know, and all of us, I think, to an extent, too, we are so constantly, from the second you get up, we're either, you know, watching the news or booking guests or covering the news or, you know, looking at topics. This is just so nice to just go home
Escape.
And unwind.
Like
and
the
binge.
Night of. Did you watch the Night of on HBO, I think?
No.
I've heard it was really good, though.
It's awesome. The transformations that take place in that are off the chain. You will see it before your eyes, and I give the actors nothing but kudos. The Night of is tight.
All Another right. one I binged was Empire. That's such a guilty pleasure, too.
I am watching that, and it's so good.
Isn't it great? It's just amazing that every week they have new original music.
I can only take so much of Empire, though. I got to be honest with you.
Oh,
the music.
Because it's a soap opera.
It is a soap opera.
It's the best.
We forgot we have to book the woman who does the set design. But when I come back, we will get her on the show.
Cool, cool.
Antonia Arcilli does the set design. Why do you can't get into it? Because it's too...
It gets too soapy for me.
That's why you don't like it. Okay.
Yeah, with the
It's real soapy.
Yeah.
Even the music, you know, it's like old school soap opera, you know.
Right.
But I grew up, my mother was watching stuff, and my dad would be like, "Who are you talking to on the phone?" Well, he said, "So and so killed so and so." And then, you know, my father, it was so real, you know.
You know what you might like? Yeah. You might like the series Brockmire on the IFC.
I love Brockmire. That was off the chain.
That is really one. Oh, Hank Azaria as a washed up broadcaster
in baseball.
Deal.
I love it.
And there's fracking involved, which on the baseball diamond. Yeah,
it's got everything.
It does. It does. I feel like we're talking about TV, so we can avoid talking.
Yes.
So we can avoid talking about. Well, that's what I was gonna ask. Do you find that, because I think a lot of people want to escape now, and that's why we get distracted easily. And this was a terrible weekend in Chicago.
Ooh. Oh my God.
Reverend Livingston was the organizer of the protest last week that shut down Lakeshore Drive, and Andrea was talking about how impressive it was that there were no arrests.
Right.
Some people, you know, hated that it happened. Other people were surprised at how smoothly it went.
Sure.
What has been, first, before the weekend started, what was the reaction in general that you found?
Well, in public, it was good. On social media, it was rough.
Yeah. You know? Don't look at the comments.
Don't read the comments.
The trolls were trolling. But I respect people's comments about it, too. People felt inconvenienced and everything, but that was the intention. You know, I picked that date, the 2nd of August, for a reason, because yesterday was the 52nd anniversary of Dr. King's march through Marquette Park, where he was hitting the head with a brick, hostile crowds and the like, you know. And so, but he didn't have any kind of sanctions from Richard J. Daley. There was no strategizing with the police department. But, you know, according to his philosophy of love and everything else, he went there to free the oppressed and the oppressor. And so we wanted to have that same kind of impact and expose the South and West Siders to something they weren't accustomed to. I said, look, guys, there's no shuttered stores, no foreclosed houses on the block. Nobody broke an ankle because the streets are paved, you know. And so when you go back home, have a different level of dissatisfaction and understand that what you were born into doesn't have to be normative. And then for a lot of the Lakeview folk and Wrigleyville folk and everything, it was to make them think, what's going on that they would come all this way to let their voices be heard? Let me think, what is this about?
Right.
Because, you know, Chicago has been intentionally segregated, and we're trying to intentionally desegregate it. It's a tale of two cities, which leads to the kind of violence that you see. So when they were talking about gang warfare today, but the gang warfare is about individuals coming together as a group to create illegitimate or alternative economies to get at assets that segregation has pushed aside. Segregation does two things. It insulates and it causes desperation. So those that are insulated have the assets, maybe more, you know, than this, that, and the other, than those that don't have them, you know. So it's a go ahead, please.
No, there's a lot of communities that are also resistant to people having the ability to even move into their neighborhoods.
Yes.
If there's a mixed housing, mixed income housing coming into the neighborhood, there was one on Milwaukee Avenue that a lot of people were fighting. And what I was surprised by were the number of people that didn't realize that more than half the people living in Jefferson Park actually qualified for that mixed income housing. They assumed that it's going to be, everyone was putting up signs that we don't want Cabrini Green.
Right.
And when you use those words, it scares people and they think, oh yeah, we don't want the ghetto,
right.
we don't want the high rises here.
That's right.
And so there's a lot of resistance in throughout the city. Basically, it seems as though people just want, you know, they want where the trouble's happening for everyone to stay there, fix
That's
it
right.
where it is.
That's right.
And they of course, I'm sure the attacks were toward you about how, why aren't you marching in Englewood?
Right.
Why aren't you marching in Austin?
Right.
And that was, again, when the mass shootings, because I think that's what we need to start calling this.
Sure.
When there are over 73 people shot,
Incredible.
12 dead.
That's right.
That's a mass shooting in Chicago.
Absolutely. Yeah. I was telling Patty today on the phone that I was working at the TV station, and I do features on the weekend, and I was called off features to cover to go to Stroger Hospital on Sunday, and we were all out there with the media, and my I had one African-American photographer, one white photographer, and the three of us were all just talking and saying, you know what? And there was, at one point, you know, there were so many shooting victims brought to Stroger who were in stable condition, in good condition. And you were, I think you were out there at one point, too. There were there was a group over on this side and a group over on this side. And they were all different people going to see their loved ones. And a mom was just crying and crying and crying. And the three of us stood there and said, you know, someone just lost their son
right.
or their daughter. You know, this has gotten to a point of where everybody's now coming together saying, what can be done? And then we were talking amongst, you know, we're different ages, we're different races, the three of us, we were just talking. And we all, I mean, think of yourself as a kid. Mm-hmm. There were fights and hair pulling, course, and I'm yes. sure you had, there, you maybe exchanged some fist fights.
I didn't hair pull.
It just, no.
I didn't punch
no.
very well either.
No, no. But I mean, like we all right, did yeah. things as kids. We all got into trouble and whatnot, but just what is it about 2018? Is it just, there's too many guns? Or when does a party turn into a mass shooting? And then we went over this today, too. Mm-hmm. Yes, this is a mass shooting because technically it is when more than three people are shot or and wounded. So this is definitely characterized as a mass shooting. People were taking exception with that term, too.
Sure. I mean, the urban setting kind of changes the context of how we view it. I mean, it's a Sandy Hook over the weekend, you know? Yeah. It didn't happen within a certain, you know, it's a Virginia Tech over the weekend. And again, that's not to be reductionist to those tragedies at all, but just in terms of showing how tragic it really is. But we're so used to it,
right.
You know? That's the scary thing, when we become numb to inhumanity. And these are human beings being cruel to one another. You know, black on black violence, blue on black violence, white on black violence, black on white violence, whatever. It's all violence. But for me, it's a symptom. It's a symptom of something else that is, it is the desperate cry that is expressed through violent action. And so what do we do to mute, to deal with the desperate cry, to pacify that? How do we reverse engineer the violence from the gun being shot to how this person got a gun to why this person needs a gun? You know, to reverse engineer that whole piece, and then you look at it, and typically, and people say this is an excuse, but it's not. It goes back to poverty. It goes back, I mean, I know people on the South and West sides who don't have working toilets. And tell me how irritating it is not to have a working toilet. No heat in the wintertime, no running water in the summertime. And again, I don't even want to be political because I'm tired of being political. But the mayor's been sitting on $500 million in HUD money for low-income housing most of his administration and won't spend it. And I know I talked to the cops Thursday. I said, look, you guys are out here on the streets. What difference would it make for a person if they had a decent place to lay their head down, if they were able to get up in some place that wasn't cracked up and bugs and roaches running around, you know, because you got $500 million there, you know? And so, and look, I love downtown. I love our beautiful skyline. I mean, I'm not against any of that, but it's about the equitable, you know, disbursement of assets.
And access to
yes,
opportunity.
And access, yes,
access
yes.
opportunity. And people would say, I think the implication, whether people say it outright or, you know, allude to it, is apparently they just think that black communities are that way.
Right.
That they're impoverished and have gangs and are violent and will just kill each other. That seems to be the implication for many people.
And it's because of a lack of historical context. You know, I think last week we talked, not last week, but I was here last rather, we talked about the great, I love this great movie with Leonardo DiCaprio and Liam Neeson, Gangs of New York. Mm-hmm. And it's a great sociological study of when people come to this country and their rise in the country, right? And so, but the difference for blacks in America is that, you know, there was something that Irish, Polish, or whatever could do, which was called marrying up. Mm-hmm. And so you would marry some. So the Italians didn't want a vowel on the end of their name.
Wait a minute, I know this one.
Yeah, right.
My mom married my dad.
Married up.
And she married an Irish guy. Wait a minute, right. I know this one.
You know, it's a, but blacks were, interracial marriage was against the law.
Right.
So then, sociologically speaking, the ability, and this happens in every society, not just America, was limited. You know, just like in India, there's the caste system.
Right.
So the real dark Indians are separated from, you know, the other Indians, you know, or even in Mexico, the darker Mexicans are separated from the Spaniards,
yes,
you know.
The European.
So, but it's tribalism, plain right. and simple. We find ways to separate ourselves in order to have power. That's all.
Let me take a break here. I know we're going to talk to Amy Guthin a little bit, but now we're starting to get some calls and texts. So let me see what we can do with our schedule to maybe do another segment so we can get to everyone's calls. 312-981-7200. More after this on WGN 720 AM. It's the Patty Vasquez Show with Andrea Darlis. Thank you for joining us on the Patty Vasquez Show with Andrea Darlis. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studios and enjoying some rubber ducky cookies.
Oh,
that were dropped
so
off for you.
Good. Thank
by
you,
Nick.
Special Olympics. Yes, and Nick, the ambassador of the Special Olympics, my guy. Love you, Nick. Miss you.
Aw.
Thank you for the cookies. We are all enjoying them.
And his mom and he love listening to WGN. He's been an athlete with Special Olympics for 15 years and is also a global messenger. And he does speeches about how Special Olympics has changed his life. Mm-hmm. This Thursday, they have their annual Chicago Ducky Derby on the Chicago River. It's a fundraiser, and he's been involved for 5 years. If you or anyone you know would like to help out Special Olympics and buy a duck, they're $5 for one, a quack pack is $6 for $25, a flock is $24 for $100, or a diamond pack is $240 for $1,000. And there's a link to his page, which is duckrace.com/Chicago/teams. Wow, there's a lot of numbers on this. /2362. I'll send a link to this on my Facebook page.
Yeah, I'll put it up too because I always buy a quack pack.
Buy a quack pack. How are those cookies?
Quack quack.
This is so very, very good.
They're excellent.
We've talked to Reverend Livingston actually several times on the show, in particular right ahead of right around when you announced that you would be shutting down Lakeshore Drive with a protest about the violence in Chicago, demanding that Mayor Rahm Emanuel step down was part of the protest as well. How did that work out? Did he do that part?
No. Not yet, but no. We're trying to make him as radioactive as possible so that his cronies will say, you know, we should do business with somebody else.
Well, I want people to do better. I guess that in life, I just want everyone to just, including myself.
Sure.
We can do better. We can do better than this.
Yeah.
We have listeners who are calling in. Diane has thoughts on the violence in Chicago. Diane, what did you want to say?
Hi, everyone. Reverend Livingston.
Yes.
I'm out here in the western suburbs, suburban housewife. I can speak for myself. Some of the people I work with that we've talked to, my neighbors, my children who also have friends, and there's a resounding consensus here of how we feel. You're marching, trying to get your point across and trying to get some help with all the violence, correct?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. And other people put out commentaries in the papers, and we have interviews with people in the news. But here's the thing that all of us talk about here in the suburbs. You want our attention. You want some help. You're pleading, crying for help. Do you know what we all are thinking out here? And I am saying everyone that I know feels the same way out here, mm-hmm. in it, the people that I know. Mm-hmm. The people in those neighborhoods that are getting shot and their children, and we see the mothers on the news, and they're crying, and my baby, and this violence has to stop. Why? The biggest thing we're all talking about, they have a code of silence. They know their neighbor shot their son. They know the guy from the next block over killed their brother. They have a code of silence. They do not want to squeal on each other. If they don't want to help themselves to make their son live to see another day, we don't care. I hate to say we don't care, but we are turning a blind eye because we're like, the people living in those neighborhoods don't even want to help themselves. So why are we going to help them? They know Tom down the block just shot Darrell. But they're not telling the police when they come that Tom did it. So if you don't want to help yourself, there's nothing we can do about it anyways. That is what everyone is thinking out in the suburbs. So when you put that on the news or it goes in the newspaper, we are thinking there's nothing we can do or want to do, honestly, that we want to help when you're not going to help yourself, when you know who's doing the violence in your neighborhood.
You know, I appreciate what you're saying. I really do. And when I say this, I don't mean to be flip, but I imagine if they were raised where you were and you were raised where they were, that they would be saying the same thing. And that's the part of the problem, is to have not just sympathy, but I'm not saying you have that, but to have empathy, to be able to walk in somebody else's shoes if they're born into this, and if there are other forces also, there before the grace of God go I. And so when one starts working with folk, the hardest thing to do is to inspire the uninspired, to inspire the jaded, to inspire the betrayed, the disappointed. It's hard work to do that. But again, I'm telling you that if individuals were to trade places, is there something intrinsically better about someone that if they were in the same spot, they wouldn't be different? That's another question we have to pose to ourselves as well.
I understand that, but that is never going to happen. You're not going to be in my shoes, and I'm not going to be in yours. We can come together and say we would like to live that way. But in reality, and to save the next person's life, that is not going to happen. So until they
are we our brother's keeper?
You know what? If my neighbor shoots someone from the next block and the police come over and I saw my neighbor go home with a gun and the police come to my door, I'm going to say, yes, I just saw my neighbor Bob and he went up his driveway with a gun. So I would go over to his house and look. That doesn't happen there. There's a code of silence there. So if they can't help one another, we're turning a blind eye to your cause out there. I guess
it's too bad that Diane doesn't live in that neighborhood, because she would be one of the people that would be helping out.
She would be snitching.
Yeah. But I mean, that's essentially, and again, we're getting a lot of texts, a text similar to Diane's. Thank you, Diane, for your comments and your thoughts. I wonder if when Martin Luther King was marching, if people would say, I don't care. This isn't going to change. I'm not going to do anything help either.
Oh, yeah. They hit him in the head with a brick.
Yeah. I live in the western suburbs, and I do call the police every time I see something suspicious.
You know what, though? I do have a question based on what Diane said as well.
Because I understand her
yeah, view, and I do, part. and I do. I mean, so is there a code of silence? And number two, if there is, why?
Well, you know, she's talking about snitching. Because when you talk about the code of silence, that's with the police department, right? The blue code of silence.
And no, I mean the code of silence amongst the suspects.
No, what I was going to say, though, is that, and so one of the things we look at is that the code of silence has generated the code of fear, you know, and so then you have snitching and a code of fear that exists in the community. Because if you grow up in these areas, you know, if you grew up in the projects, for instance, the projects were built like prisons. There's a guardhouse, there's fenced in, there's rows and everything, kind of like getting you prepared for prison as you're growing up. Again, this is not to push any kind of victimology, but, you know, to try to teach someone, you need to tell what that person did, and then you don't know if justice is going to happen, because this same lady would want to be anonymous on a 911 call if she saw XYZ, because she wouldn't want it to be known that she's the one that called. Now, think about it, if you had a neighborhood that hears people say, well, so-and-so is the one that did it. And there is a price to pay for that. I'm not making an excuse, but it's a reality that, you know, that people, elderly people, seniors, you know, people who are not involved in the bang bang, you know, the shoot 'em up stuff, you know, there is fear, real fear of being taken out.
That's what the 224 says. The lady that just called in did not take into consideration that the threat of giving someone up, that your life is now in jeopardy.
Yeah.
And another listener from the 630 says, the woman in the western suburbs is not me. She does not speak for me, and I live in those suburbs. She is part of the problem. We're all part of the problem.
It's not a blame game.
No. I live in the western suburbs, and I do call the police every time I see something happening. Stop with the excuses from the 224. Hi, Patty. I enjoy the comments from your guests. As a white suburban male, I watch my dad and my uncles fix their own toilets when they broke. Same for the furnace and painting and landscaping, etc. They did not wait for HUD money to be released to solve their problems. When white America hears that people are waiting for government money to solve their problems, it ticks them off, and they assume that blacks are lazy and not showing any initiative. Maybe your guest can comment on that.
Well,
thanks.
If we're lazy, I think slavery gave us some credit. You know, we did a lot of work for free in this country to help build this country. So
you're going to set off a whole firestorm of texts right
without
there.
Without a doubt, the truth hurts, you know. And the thing is who taught your daddy and your granddaddy to fix toilets? My father and grandfather could fix toilets, too. But, you know, something happened, you know, in America. You know, something happened where people were cut off. You know, when I was a kid, there were trade schools you could go to. They had shop classes, a wood shop, metal shop, and all that. And these things were taken out of the schools. So the question then becomes, are you a mechanical genius? Are you a Mr. Fix-It? I mean, what happens? How do you do that? And then what happens with the pressure of trying to make money? How do we survive? You know, and again, I'm not making excuses. I'm glad your dad and your granddad could fix toilets and do everything with their hands. So could my dad and their uncles. But guess what? I'm not my dad and my uncles. You know, they're from a different generation. I'm not a Mr. Fix-It. I'm going to call somebody. You know, I used to mow grass when I was a kid. I'm going to call somebody to come mow my grass, come landscape. I'm just saying, there was a generation where you did everything yourself. But look at the generation we have now. You know, everything is about the internet, this, that, and the other. It's different now. I'm not making excuses, but it's different.
Before I know we have more callers coming in, but I've got Amy Guth coming up in just a moment, who I'm grateful that she allowed me to bump her back a segment. I know
Thank you, Amy.
Yes, yeah. And we know that you are planning another protest.
Yes.
And this is going to be something that I think even more people are going to be very angry about.
Oh, my gosh. We're going to shut down O'Hare Field, possibly, on Labor Day, the ingress and egress of traffic there, because we have to hit the pockets, the money, the economics. That's the only way people will be heard. We must affect commerce. And so, you know, I mean, and really, what's the difference in what we're doing and what happened on the Dan Ryan? They're both on federal thoroughfares. What's the difference?
This is the same way. Go ahead, Andre. I know you had concerns about this.
Yeah, no, my concern, I think, on multi-levels, I think now it becomes of you're affecting people coming to visit or people who don't even live here. And I wanted to ask you, too, and I told you I was going to ask you this, too, about the federal repercussions.
Yes.
Because then this becomes like a TSA-type issue with airport security.
Yeah, but we're not going in the airport. We're just going to be blocking people from going in and coming out or coming in.
A similar protest the day of the Muslim ban after President Trump took office.
And I'm saying, you know, Rahm sanctioned the Dan Ryan. That was federal thoroughfare. He didn't have jurisdiction over that. You know, and the police chief walked arm in arm with everybody. I mean, what's the difference in what we're doing and what they did back there? I mean, I'm sure Rahm can see they're both federal expressways.
All right. I know Bill and Brian want to join the conversation, but I want to thank our guest, Reverend Livings. He's like, what? He wants to talk to more people. No, yeah. I've got to get to Amy because she's been waiting.
Thank you, Amy. Yeah,
thank you so much.
thank you.
Reverend Livingston, if people want to find out more information about what you guys are up to, or if they want to just direct their texts at you.
That's right.
Because we're having this up. Where can they find you?
By Rahm 2019, like bye-bye, like B-Y-E, by Rahm 2019 on Facebook. Coalition for New Chicago on Facebook, and you can come directly at me on Twitter at GS Livingston, at GSLLIVINGSTON.
Before you go, yes. I want to know why we pit the north side with against the south side, and why don't you go to the mayor's house, since it is about the mayor in many ways.
Well, I don't like messing with his house, but I have been there, though. I have been there, and it was cold. You know, he was in the window walking around with a sweater on.
And that's an image we're going to leave on.
Cold, or he was physically cold? Okay.
No, it was January. It was, okay. Yeah, he had like a Bill Cosby sweater on. Yeah. Cliff Huxtable.
And that's the image we'll leave you with. Thank you, Brian and Bill. I know you wanted to jump in here, but we will have Reverend Livingston on again, I'm sure, in the coming weeks. Be well, sir, and enjoy your ducky cookie.
I will.
We'll have Amy Guth when we come back in just a moment on 720 WGN. Our very own Amy Guth is on the line. Amy, thank you so much for being patient. I apologize because we never know when the Sox game is going to end. We're like, any minute now. How you doing, Amy?
It's so good. Thanks for having me, and thanks for leading me in with a Smith song. That's awesome.
There you go. Michael looks like he's like, I knew she would like that.
Thank you.
You got it, Amy.
Producer Mike Heidemann.
He's of course.
The best. Tell us about Female Filmmakers Night.
Yes. Well, so in addition to hosting at WGN Radio, I'm also newly named the executive director of the Midwest Independent Film Festival.
Ooh, yay!
And
ooh, yay!
So Thank you. It's so fun. I've been going to this festival for a long time, so it's so fun to be involved in this more meaningful way now. It's great. So the annual Female Filmmakers Night is coming up. It is tomorrow. It starts at 6:00. There's cocktails at 6:00. At 6:30 p.m., we are having a panel discussion. We always have one every month before the screening. And this one is going to be women from the film industry talking about the landscape, about, you know, representation, and just navigating a career in the film industry in the post-Me Too era that we're in. And, then the screening will start, and we have 8 films. They're all short films from female-identifying filmmakers representing the Midwest, and it was very, very difficult to you know, navigate or narrow down that list, rather, and to just 8, because there were so many beautiful films that were submitted. So they will be shown, and even though this is an annual event and the festival has been doing this for a while, we're doing something a little bit new this year, and that is, for the first time ever, we convened a jury of really awesome women that work in the film industry in Chicago. And we had a jury night, and they got together, and we really talked through all these films, and they have selected a grand jury prize. There is a female filmmaker grand jury prize, and that is going to be presented by Chaz Ebert, who is honorary jury chair, and it's going to be such an exciting night. I cannot wait for like every stage of it is so exciting to me. So I think it's just going to be a really cool night, really just celebrating women's contributions to film in the Midwest.
Well, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Amy, were you stunned? There was a stat. It was the last Oscars, and it said that Barbara Streisand was the last female director to be nominated. It was for The Prince of Tides, right? Which was way 30 years earlier than. Has it gotten better? I mean, even in the past year and a half, do you think it's gotten better, Amy, in the industry for women?
I mean, better in the sense that we're having conversations out in the open that I think we've been having for years behind closed doors with each other, you know? So I'm thrilled that there's space to have these conversations about representation and equality and just doing work side by side in a community with all kinds of people. And that's really a big goal of mine going into this role in the festival, is really making sure that every kind of filmmaker has what they need to succeed, because, you know, it's so sad to me. It's exciting and sad when filmmakers, you know, come up through Chicago and then get poached by the, you know, New York or LA or whatever. And I just think it's a time in which we can make it possible and sustainable for a creative person to have a career here in the Midwest and especially here in Chicago. So I'm, you know, a big focus of mine is all about building, you know, building community around all this work, because there's so much cool work out there right mm-hmm. now. And, you know, you don't have to have millions of dollars and top of the line equipment to make a really beautiful and powerful and moving film. You can, I mean, Tangerine is the film I often point to, because that was shot on an iPhone and it's cleaned up at Sundance. Like, people were blown away by that film. So, you know, it's the barrier of entry is much easier now. People can make a film and get it to people, and they can distribute through social media and other digital platforms. So it's just an exciting time for filmmakers, I think.
And how do people get involved? Because I'm looking at the list of all the movies that are, you know, on this incredible part of this night, the Female Filmmakers Night, a wide range of topics, some that are animated, some that are documentaries. How do you call the submissions and decide what you're going to present on a night like this?
It is not easy. It is not easy at all. So, you know, we have a screening panel, and all the screeners that view that film give it a score, and, you know, kind of piece by piece. So we kind of give a score for sound and music. We give a score for performance, one for directing and cinematography. And then that all adds up to a main score. So then we just kind of look at, okay, what films got the highest scores? And then we kind of start whittling from there. And sadly, there's, you know, a really small time frame. You know, we kind of have to fit it all in under 90 minutes tops. So it was, you know, it was not easy to make some of those decisions, but but we did. And I'm really excited about the range of films in there. I think the shortest one is about 3 minutes, and the longest one is about 17 minutes, or just under 17. So it's a really, you know, wide variety of things. And I mean, some are so funny, and some are so moving, and some are, you know, atmospheric and kind of scary, and some are just really touching and sweet. So there's kind of a little bit of everything there.
I love what you've put together, and this sounds like an amazing night, not just for people who are film lovers, but people who want to hear a wide range of stories, but also, I'm guessing, people who are interested in perhaps becoming filmmakers themselves.
Absolutely. It is a great place for networking, and I think one thing that this festival has really done a great job of cultivating all these years is the way that entry-level new filmmakers feel like they can show up and ask questions in a very intimidating environment. You know, at the producer panel, which happens before every screening, there's always a Q&A, and people are really there to learn from the people on that panel. They want to learn from the best, and there's always really smart people on the panel. I'm not just saying that because I've been on the panel a couple of times, but there's always just people doing cool stuff on these panels, and it really warms my heart when I see a young filmmaker raise their hand and say, okay, you just said a term I don't know. Would you explain that to me? Without saying, sorry for this question, or this might be stupid, but, or what, you know, and just asking. And to me, that says, okay, this environment is a place where people feel welcome and safe to ask and to support and ask for support. And I think that's very cool.
Amy, there was a cool article with Mila Kunis over the weekend. And she said when she was working with Susanna Fogel on The Spy Who Dumped Me, she said there was absolutely a difference between working with a male director and a female director. She said no one was yelling at each other. Nobody got mad. No one screamed. And at 7 o'clock, you got to go home and see your kids for dinner. It was lovely.
I believe it.
Wow.
So that's kind of cool. It's a testament to us, right?
That's right. That's right. I mean, I just think there's so much cool stuff going on. There's like women's film collectives popping up and all these cool things like that, where it's just like, let's just help each other do cool work. The stuff that the guys are doing, that's cool too, but it seems like sometimes power is not evenly distributed and neither is opportunity. So let's help each other win and help each other do awesome work. And I love seeing, you know, nights like this where we're just celebrating the work of female filmmakers.
And Amy Guth, too. I have to say this, and I know Patty, you agree with me. You talk the talk and you walk the walk, too. I mean, you are always one of the first people to say, good job, sister.
Yeah.
You really are.
Oh, no, I still have my stationery.
Amy Guth made me stationery, and I still have it framed.
And she would have been
my home office.
And then in another life, perhaps this one, she would be a great roller derby athlete as well. Man, you were badass on the wheels.
I mean, let's do that again. That was pretty fun.
I think we need to bring Andrea next time to do roller derby.
Totally. I'm in. If Guth is there, I'm in.
There you go. Amy, how do people find out more about tomorrow night's event and about the female filmmakers in general?
So the Midwest Independent Film Festival, our events are the first Tuesday of every month. So that's real easy to remember. It's always at the Landmark Century Cinema, 2828 North Clark. And people can go to midwestfilm.org or .com, whichever they prefer, and they can find tickets. We've still got some tickets available tonight if they hustle really quickly. So they can grab tickets. They can hang out. People can network with other filmmakers. People can meet the filmmakers we have there. People can meet the women that were on the jury that selected the winning film and meet Chaz Ebert and just all the things. It's going to be a really fun night.
Go do all the things with Amy Guth. Amy, it was a pleasure talking to you again. Thank you for your patience. Wonderful to hear your voice and look forward to seeing you again soon. And I want to go to one of these first Tuesdays.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I would love for both of you to be there. Let's do this.
We'll do it, Amy.
Let's do it. Let's make this happen. All right. Good night, Amy. Get some rest. You got a lot of work tomorrow.
Thanks so much. Good night.
Bye, Amy.
Bye, Amy. More in a moment.
Bye.
More in a moment on 720 WGN. No Complaints Day is coming up. Andrea, are you ready for No Complaints Day?
I know it's the day. It's the day after my birthday, I think, so I shouldn't be complaining anyway.
You should be still basking in the glow of your birthday.
Yes.
I like the idea.
I have
of
to
that.
Work, but I'm not complaining, Paige.
Right. No, that's good.
Because I want to work the
right.
day. Yes.
Right, because what's the alternative?
Yeah.
Not working.
Exactly.
There you go. Joe Kieran King joins us on the line. Joe, tell us how you created this incredible day of No Complaints.
Good evening, and thanks for having me on.
Of course.
How this got started is in 2014, my mom spent about 3 months in the hospital battling some different conditions she had in terms of COPD and some setbacks as it went through. And eventually she passed away on April 3rd in 2014. Mm. And throughout that time, my mother was really a trooper through all of that, and complaining was not one of the things that she did during that time. She just took each new problem or each breakdown with what I'll call that I can see better today is a lot of backbone. And about 2 months after she passed away in July, I was, you know, on Facebook, which may be better known as Complaint Book. And I just, and I noticed how many complaints people have, and that they complain and complain and complain, and nothing happens with those complaints. They just perpetuate more complaining. And I thought, geez, what would it be like if just one day you didn't complain, or there wasn't complaining available, or it just didn't happen? And it was just a couple weeks before my mom's birthday, and I thought, you know, maybe I'll just try and throw it out there and see what happens. Maybe, you know, maybe me and a couple friends can just take it on and do this really in honor of my mother and you know, her legacy for how she approached life and how she really approached what was not a really pleasant time of her life that ultimately ended her life.
What a testament to your mom to create a day that I know has gone viral. I mean, this has gone around the world, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has. It. I still get comments from people. Well, that's one of the things that helps social media, that, you know, you didn't have, we didn't have 20, 30 years ago. But I've spoken with people from as far away as even, I think, even China and parts of Europe and the UK and even in South America, Brazil. People find it to be something that they like to take on, and also discover that it does make a difference if you do take it on.
I like the tips, too, that you include in there, Joe. One of my favorites, practice letting go. And I have problems with it. I think people in general have problems just letting things that bother them, letting it go. It's got to be so hard.
Yeah. To find grace in that, too.
And
yeah.
Peace.
I think it doesn't mean it, but I think people think if they practice letting something go or even just putting it aside, like they're giving up on whatever that is they're complaining about, or they agree with the, if you don't agree with something and you give up on it, it means like you're giving in. You're not really doing that. You may be just giving yourself a break.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the thing is that people don't believe that they can refrain, that they can change. They're like, this is who I am. It's, you know, I like who I am. But change is also good for your brain. I know that you've listed a couple of things about who we are as far as the types of complainers. Have you found over the 5 years that you've done this that people don't even realize that they are complaining?
No way. They don't know it. It just goes in the background. It just becomes as common as getting up,
right,
and eating and sleeping. You know, what do? I eat and I sleep and I complain every day, but they don't see it as that.
Right.
At least I don't.
So instead of complaining, you should look for something positive to think about, right?
I think that that's part of it, but I think that's also difficult, too. I struggle with sometimes trying to find the positive in something genuinely, meaning I can try and say something positive about something, but if I don't really feel that, then I would consider myself being phony.
Good point.
But if I can just put it aside and just let it be, meaning it's kind of like the way I describe it is like, hey, take your complaint and put it on a table.
Right.
And just leave it on the table, and you can come back to it later, but it'll still be there. That way you don't have that attachment or a loss of attachment. Like, you know, and then something else can arise, you know, in the space of take the complaint out, what's there?
Right. Quiet. Maybe some peace.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe some peace is there. Or maybe I just don't really have to deal with that right now.
Right. Right. You can sort of dissipate a situation or diffuse it by just taking a moment. There actually is a study that says that if you feel rage, take a breath, because your brain needs about 6 seconds to sort of back off of something.
Right.
To readjust. Right. So maybe when you're about to complain, we talked about this with our friend Daryl.
Yes.
With meditation.
Yes. Take three deep breaths.
Take three
deep
breaths.
Before you leave the house and before you go to bed.
And now before you complain.
Yes.
How about that, Joe?
I like it. Yeah. That's a tool, whatever works for you, too. And that's, I think, probably scientifically proven that helps and works, where it doesn't fire off, you know, your neurons to, you know, just blurt out stuff in your mind and out of your mouth.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. Stop blurting stuff out. How do people become a part of, you know, so they can share with us, with everybody else, participate and sort of, you know, share their success with No Complaints Day? How can people participate?
Well, one way you can do that is to just, you know, share it with others. But if you can, we have a website, and it's called the NoComplaintsDayChallenge.com.
Okay. And you also have a Facebook page, right, with events. You can probably search for that as well.
Yes. I want to just give you the, there's also, we have the event. You can search for it, but you can also find it on NCDC0812. It stands for No Complaints Day Challenge. 0812 is my mom's birthday.
Aww. There you go. By the way, the 331 says, why complain? Any day above ground is a good day. Be well. That's from Randy. Aww. And we pass that along to you, Joe. And thank you so much. We need to bring you in studio some night to play some music for us again.
Yeah, we need to do that. That would be good. You get no complaints out of me out of that.
All right, I'll
and
let
remember
you...
that this year it's on a Sunday.
Oh, yeah. Right.
So, you know, you might spend time with your family, and we tend to complain about them a lot, too. So just enjoy your day with your family, and I know you've got some challenges coming up, too, with your son, and I wish you the best.
Oh, I appreciate that. Thank you.
With that and to you, and just hope you have a great, peaceful day, but not only Sunday, but going forward.
Oh,
that's true.
I wish you so much fun and peace on this Sunday. Enjoy yourself. Again, No Complaints Day Challenge this Sunday on August 12th in memory of Marion Kieran. We want to thank her son, Joe Kieran, for sharing that with us. And I hope your sister Patty's doing well.
Yes.
Yes. And tell her hi from me. And we will see you soon.
I will do that. Take care and have a great night.
You
bye,
too.
Joe.
Bye, Joe.
Bye.
Bye-bye. When we come back, we're going to check in with Representative Stephanie Kifowit to find out about some legislation that recently passed that I think is going to be interesting. I hope it's interesting to many people. Did you have sex ed when you were a kid?
We did.
I had my pastor gave us sex ed.
Oh,
it was
God.
Weird. It was creepy. More after this on 720 WGN. Before the break, I was asking Andrea if she remembers her sex ed classes.
I do.
Esmeralda, do you remember your sex ed classes?
They were not really much of anything.
All right, then. Well, something has changed. It was, oh my gosh.
Isn't it awkward? I mean, because you have co-ed. I mean, you're in class with the, you know.
The other ones?
Yeah, the
boy with the bits and the parts. Yeah. Michael, did you have sex ed?
Yes. Shout out to Sister LeClaire on that
one. You had a nun.
Some people had nuns teach them sex ed. Oh, my pastor, God. Zabel, he taught me sex ed. There was a point he goes, now what I want to show you is, and he went to hike up his pants.
Stop.
And I swear, a few of us like freaked out because we thought he was going to show us. But he was just hiking up his pants before he drew something on the board.
Right. And you're like, no.
There was something. Well, there was, I think there for many kids who grew up like us, there was something that we never really quite understood about sex. And I think that this legislation that Representative Kifowit's going to tell us about might help some people understand what it means to decide if they're going to participate in sexual activities. I don't even know what I'm talking about, Rep Kifowit, because it's weird and it's hard and it's uncomfortable, isn't it?
Well, some people find it uncomfortable. Some people don't. What this legislation came from is actually high school students in my district that were not uncomfortable about talking about the subject.
And that's great.
Yeah.
What exactly did they want to accomplish? And thank you so much for guiding them through this process. I saw the photos of when they were, you know, giving testimony and attending hearings. What inspired them to come up with this?
Well, what they expressed was that throughout this evolution of the Me Too moment, nobody was really talking about what defines sexual harassment. You know, there's harassment and abuse on college campuses and the workplace. What's the definition of consent? And so they came to me and they said, look, we don't even know half of what's being talked about. Because we've never learned, really, what is the definition of consent and what really is the definition of what harassment is and sexual harassment. So we went to work and we passed the bill because that's what representatives do when they listen to their constituent and they have a great idea is we pass the bill to incorporate those definitions into the curriculum.
Is this, I mean, it goes much farther, I'm sure, Representative, than no means no. Because with the Me Too movement, you know, and I think on some level this is a little bit of an excuse when you hear certain people saying, men and women, well, that's okay, that's acceptable, that's how guys are, you know, and that just nothing angers me more. And a lot of men, too, who are like,
yeah.
Hey, we are not like that. That's not locker room talk. We don't, you know, we don't talk like that in the locker room.
Oh, absolutely. And what the students felt is beneficial is actually when you have that discussion, then the students can reflect upon, hey, I witnessed that behavior. Or, you know, maybe one guy would be like, oh, I thought I was just joking, but it's not good behavior. So it really raises the level of discussion to where it needs to be, which is to respect everybody and to understand that there are boundaries for everybody mm-hmm. and to have a discussion about that.
We have more to talk about with Representative Kifowitz. She is representative for the 84th District. Do you mind hanging on through the news, or do you have another movie to go see?
Fine.
I want to find out what you thought of.
I'm good.
I want to find out what you thought about Mamma Mia 2.
Oh, yeah.
She saw it.
Everybody was posting about that today. I must have been a mass exodus to see that movie.
I guess so. We're going to find out more from Representative Stephanie Kifowitz when we come back. She's a Marine, by the way. I like always throwing that in for people.
Thank you for your service.
Right? But and I want to talk about that, too.
You.
When we talk about what it means, you know, boys will be boys. I'm pretty sure the rep's been around some guys who could control themselves because, you know, that's kind of part of the, you know, following orders. More with our guest, Representative Stephanie Kifowitz, when we come back on 720 WGN. Man, when this song came out, I was like, I needed this in high school. Although, when I was in high school, I always said no, which also was why I didn't date. And you know what? Part of that is that women should all, girls should feel like it's okay to say no, regardless of whether or not a boy's going to stop liking them. And the
Absolutely.
Same thing for boys.
Yeah.
Representative Kifowitz, was that part of what the kids told you about, you know, the idea that, you know, without talking about it in classes or being able to have some sort of guidance, that there's a sort of, you know, going along with it because he wants me to, or she, you know, I'm afraid of the guys making fun of me if I don't put out or you know, show that I'm, you know, I'm so successful when it comes to the girls.
Well, I think some of that, but I think also it was a little bit more simpler, which is, how do you define consent? I mean, you can say no means no, but you go on the internet and you have some guy who brags about getting girls that say no to say yes. And to me, that's not consent, that's pressure. And so I think it's a more comprehensive discussion instead of just like, well, I want to be cool and I don't want to be cool. I think they want it to be a little bit deeper to actually talk about.
So they're better than we
what does it mean to consent?
Yeah, because, I mean, for me, it seemed as though that's how I remember it in high school was, you know, there were the girls that put out and those are the ones the guys wanted to date.
Right.
But it was a lot of pressure. That was more of what we, I think, experienced. But what does it mean? It is important. And I'm so impressed that these kids reached out to you. Again, we're talking to Representative Stephanie Kifowitz of the 84th District. And one of your constituents actually texted in Rep Kifowitz. Our friend in Aurora, he says, "Hi, Patty. I've supported Stephanie since the beginning. She walked down our street alone and stopped to introduce herself about 10 years ago. And she, I think this text is broken up. She took about 30 minutes asking my wife, me, and two other neighbors how we felt about the state and national issues at that time. Who does that unless you're in a town of 200? We live in the second largest city in Illinois. She was wonderful. And anyone that involved gets my vote every time she's on the ballot."
That's awesome.
Aw.
Wow. I feel like
that's so sweet.
I feel like you owe Jerry some money in Aurora.
Yeah.
Oh, Jerry.
Jerry and Aurora.
Yeah.
I think it's cool now, though. I mean, because like when we were growing up, we went to, you know, you got a date, you went to the prom, you went to the homecoming. Now everyone goes in groups with friends.
Right.
I think it's safer, and I think it's, you know, it's better.
Less pressure,
right.
Oh, I mean, things definitely are changing, and I think it's because people are talking about it. People are speaking up about it. I had, and the group of students I had was male and females. I had male students say, "I want to talk about this too." So I think that's a huge bonus for that generation.
It is. One of the listeners from the 301 says, "Sex ed was probably a good thing because when my dad had the talk with me, I had no idea what he was talking about." My mom's conversation, I think I told you this before. My dad, of course, that would have been weird. But okay. My mom and I were at the Kentucky Fried Chicken that used to be right across the street from the Superdog. There was a KFC right at Milwaukee and Devon. She goes, I was telling her I had a crush on a boy named Jason.
Yeah.
And she goes, "Don't get so excited." And that was it, right? And then when I was older, I asked her why she never talked to me about sex. She goes, "I did. When you said you like Jason, I said, don't get so excited.
Right. That was the talk.
That was it.
Oh, yeah. I had the talk with my mom. I remember sitting in my bedroom back then. She was talking to me about everything. And I was like, why? You know?
What is happening? Did she like charts?
Yeah, no, just the inflation. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
Until what? I'm 60? What?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I learned more from Judy Blume than I did from my mom.
Oh, love Judy Blume.
I do, too. I have more texters that are texting in, but I also want to talk about the legislation. Here, let me see this real quick. "I always taught my children that no means no. Unfortunately, they didn't always seem to grasp that when I told them no about something myself." Well, That's great.
That's good.
So I know that you also have legislation that was important to you in regards to the 24-hour notice for the veterans' homes in the state of Illinois. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Correct. It's legislation that came from the investigation into the Quincy Veterans Home and the deadly Legionella disease that went through the veterans home, took 13 lives and sickened over 60 individuals. And through the hearings that we conducted, the director of Veterans Affairs at that time acknowledged that they never told the healthy people what to do to stay healthy. They right. never informed the residents wow. of what was going around so that they could take precautionary measures to not get sick. And then we had 63 people sick and 13 people deceased. So we actually had to legislate standard operating procedures that if a deadly disease is going through any veteran home, that you need to notify the healthy people on how to stay healthy. It's common sense, and it's almost embarrassing we had to pass it, but I think it'll save lives in the future.
Yeah, what did you hear from some of the families? Did you talk to the survivors of the individuals who lost their lives in some of these homes?
A lot of the information that we got was through the reporting, the very good reporting of the real news that is out there that we appreciate very well. And anything from family members calling to check on their loved ones and being told, oh, they're okay. And then the coroner said, oh, no, they had been deceased for several days, to just begging the nurses to get them help and to get treated. And, it you know, to see their loved ones, you know, suffer and pass away in a manner that is a preventable disease. If treated right away with antibiotics, it is preventable. And unfortunately, there were significant delays, and the individuals got sick and unfortunately died. So the case in point is Legionella spread from water vapor. But testimony was that they only knew there was a respiratory disease going around. And when you hear respiratory, you think cold, and you wash your hands more, which is the complete opposite of what you're supposed to do when it's transferred by water vapor. So we need to make sure that our veterans and the families are properly informed if there is a infectious disease going around like Legionella did in the Quincy home.
When we first started covering the story, Representative, I think a lot of people thought, oh, this is just kind of a little building. This is a sprawling complex. This is a complex where the veterans live. So it's not so easy just to tear it down and rebuild the whole thing. I mean, it would take a lot of time and a lot of money. But is that a proposal that's on the table, kind of to start from square one again?
Well, it is, but as you said, it was a complex, and the Legionella was actually pinpointed to one particular building in that complex more so than some of the other ones. So they're focusing on that. But again, throughout this whole mismanagement, the former director said, we were calling on people to be moved right away. And the former director said, well, we can't move them, they're too fragile. Well, now, 3 years later, all of a sudden, they can move people into a new facility and rehab the old one. So the point is, why didn't they do that 3 years ago and save people's lives and save people from getting sick? Well, there's just mismanagement throughout the whole thing.
Well, I know that you work very hard to try to hold people accountable. When I first met you in 2015, and there were all these conversations about what was going on with social services, and you said, you know, well, let's find out how we're going to pay this. I mean, it's not like you always want to know what the other side of something is, and I admire that so much. And all the work that you do, not just for the state of Illinois, but all of our veterans who live in the state of Illinois in particular. So thank you so much for always bringing attention to suicide awareness amongst our veterans and what can be done to do better by them. The promise that we make when we ask them to take on a job that most of us can't or won't do.
Right.
Oh, absolutely. And as Patty said, I'm one of the fewer and the prouder because I'm a woman Marine, which you don't run into women Marine that often. So I give a shout out to all my fellow sisters out there that served in the Marine Corps, which is the 100th year of Women Marines this year, and I'm going to a conference in Washington, D.C. to celebrate it.
Happy anniversary.
Hey, cool.
It's amazing. 100 years of Women Marines. It's awesome.
That is incredible. And
can you imagine being in a room of like hundreds of Women Marines, Patty?
When are you going? Can I? Cool. I need a media pass for that. That would be wonderful.
Right? I'll send you the details in a text. We can work it out.
All right. I like that. Now I have to know. Are we doing a test now, Michael? Oh, that was just a head beep.
A warning.
Is that a It's coming. Representative Kiffewood, I do have to know, as with your fellow Marines, do you think they would look down on you for having gone to see Mamma Mia 2, or because you went with your daughter, they would admire and respect you for that?
Well, I have the text. It was my daughter's suggestion. And myself, being that my daughter is going to have a birthday in September, a milestone birthday of 21, it's very honorable for me to be able to accompany her in public to the movies.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I was very pleased.
And what did you think of Mamma Mia 2?
Oh, it's fun. It's a fun movie. They play ABBA songs that aren't all mainstream, so they're kind of interesting. And Cher's in it, which is a lot of fun, so we really enjoyed it.
Now, do you have any interest in seeing Mamma Mia 2?
I totally want to see Mamma.
Really?
I really like Mamma, the first one.
Yeah.
I think I agreed with everybody else. Pierce Brosnan, not the best singer, but I cried. I love Mamma Mia 1.
They took that into consideration in Mamma Mia 2. I will tell you that.
Okay, good.
Can I ask if they dubbed him, or did he sing talk? Or
sing less?
Yes.
Less.
Okay.
Less is always more, in my opinion. So
fair.
It was less.
Fair.
That's good.
Well, enjoy the rest of your summer. Thank you so much for taking the time out this evening and staying up so late with us. Is ildistrict84.com the best way to find you, or do you have another site? Because that's coming up
first. Oh, no, that's our website. Yep, that's our website for all our events coming up. We have a kid expo coming up in September and a lot of great things, so I just encourage. And we let anybody come to our events, even if you're not in the 84th District. We're open for anybody and all people.
Are you still doing Monday coffees with the rep?
Monday coffees every Monday morning, 8:30 to 9:30 at various locations around the area. So, and again, we have people travel from Yorkville to come to our coffees, and we allow everybody and anybody to come. So it's a lot of fun.
Again, go to ildistrict84.com for more information about Representative Kiffewood. And if you're not sure who your representative is, go to openstates.org and you can enter your information and find out who represents you. Thank you so much, Rep. We'll talk to you again soon. Have a great summer.
Thank you. You too.
Excellent. Thank you. Thank you. More after this on 720 WG. And I think there's going to be like one of those buzzy sounds, one of those alarms. Andrea, we're going to do one of those. Before the EAS test, Representative Kiffewood was mentioning that she will be going to Washington, D.C. for the 100th anniversary of Women in the Marines. And she said you can go to the website. It's womenmarines.org/WMA-events. Go to womenmarines.org for more information for the Women Marines Association. So thank you, Representative Kiffewood, for the information as well. And comedian Paul Farvar joins us in studio.
Yeah, I'm here.
How last we spoke to you, your computer had been hacked.
Yes.
And being held for bitcoins.
Ransomwared. Yeah.
Well, how much is a
point
Bitcoin?
Point eight Bitcoin at the time was $6,500.
Okay.
But I've been negotiating with my hackers, and we've worked out a deal. I got one computer back safe and sound.
Wait, how do you negotiate with the hackers?
You just talk to them.
The phone?
No, this is all via email.
Okay.
Well, I gave them a long email once, and they said one sentence only. That's pretty funny. I mean,
they said one sentence only?
Yeah, please make your request in one sentence, because I think they're doing a translate thing.
Oh, I see. What
Or
strange...
they just don't understand my verbose.
Yeah.
Were you legit when you told me you've made friends with one of these hackers?
Well, they seem nice. I mean, I explained my situation, and I'm like, hey, you know, I need these files, and you know, without them, you know, the value goes down to me, which is kind of true, because if something, you know, I have stuff that I need for a comedy and whatnot, and I'm like, well, if I don't have them, then I'm not going to do this idea or the show, and I'm not going to get paid. So then they started understanding, it seemed. I think they have some empathy.
Do you think they were going through some of your material and just going, no, this guy's not, there's no way he has enough to
that's
to
what
spend
I'm saying.
Bitcoin.
I'm like, you guys have my shows that I bombed. Like, go listen to that view. You know I need this money.
Okay,
so, no,
sort of
I think it's, we'll see. I mean, I've been doing a lot of research. I've talked to a lot of experts and, you know, I just have to work with them.
There's nothing much you can do.
Yeah,
you can't call the authorities. By the way, speaking of which, there's a neighbor on my block who just was part of a scam. So like this hacking, scamming, it's
all different kinds. Yeah.
It seems as though it's not a matter of if, but when you're either going to get hacked or someone's going to try to get personal information from you to steal money from you.
Yeah,
or to
identity
your
theft,
bank records.
They'll do that. This is a little different. There's different types. people will get scammed a lot on your personal stuff. They'll say, hey, we're going to leak stuff. They'll go into your computer and they'll try to leak things. That's kind of dangerous.
Like pictures and
pictures
stuff?
And stuff that yep. you've had. There's different ways of that happening. But that's this. What I have is called encryption, where they don't even have access to my files. They've just, they went into it and encrypted everything.
Right.
So they
right.
don't have anything. Because I was actually like trying to say, can you just pull these two files up if I pay you this? And they said, they didn't say it, but from doing my research, they don't have access to it.
Yeah.
From what I know. But
it's just wild that you're kind of negotiating with
yeah, hackers. I'm just kind of like, hey, I mean, I'm not going to pay you that much. It's not worth it to me.
Can you try and explain I don't have that
I
much
did.
To kind of pity me?
I think they Google. I mean, I'm pretty public. They know who I am. I mean, they obviously somehow knew when to attack when I was out of town. So I don't know how these things work. But they are targeting law firms. So they must think I'm a full-time lawyer or something.
Right.
Or they also target health professionals too now.
Oh, wow.
And this same ransomware, similar one, shut down San Francisco Transit Authority recently too. They got them.
On a personal level, on this side of it, can you think of anything that you could have? Could you have backed up your files or kept them in a cloud? Or was there something
we have
that you
some
wish-
stuff? Yeah, I mean, the stuff that it's just the timing was weird. Like I don't need like 95% of the stuff that they have. I don't need.
Mm-hmm.
That's a different life for me. But there are certain things that I needed in the coming months. But everything else that I needed, I have backed up in my own personal
okay.
stuff. All my personal stuff I've got. And it's definitely, I'm changing the way I'm going to back stuff up. We did have things backed up, but you have to almost have a double and triple backup. Because okay. I had a double, but if I had a triple, I would have been able to get the two files that I needed.
So like,
it's kind of weird.
A triple like with external like drives? Or?
External backup. There's different things that you, depending on what kind of businesses you have. For Apple, you can do a lot of iCloud stuff. You can do a lot of stuff, although there's problems with iCloud.
Absolutely.
They're saying too. So the best thing to do, I think, is to do an iCloud and a combination of a backup. And a backup, and mm-hmm. then exchanging two backups if you have an external hard drive every once in a while.
We are learning from Paul's Pain.
Yes.
Paul's, no kidding.
I feel like we should do Paul's Pain.
Paul's Pain.
Paul's
oh,
Pain.
Yeah.
That'd be interesting.
After all this is done, if I get all my stuff back, we have to do what's Paul eating from
no.
Mexico.
Oh,
no.
Poor Paul.
I took a vote. I took a vote with Andrea. I didn't want to just sort of unilaterally make a decision, but I think that, yeah.
Paul, I like the segment, but I can't, you know.
Yeah.
I think you've got to understand that there's
mostly
a
likes to watch me go crazy.
I think so.
It's fun to hear people try to guess what it is.
It's not really
what you're eating.
Do you want to try one at some? No.
You know what?
All.
It's not like I pick like soup or it's not like
that would be funny to me.
It's interesting to see. Yeah, like
smacking his lips.
There's no like. It's not gross. You out.
Just show her during the break. More for this on 720 WTN. I feel like the hackers are sticking it to you. Justice for none right now, Paul.
Yeah, you know, if you're out there, guys, I hope we maybe friend me on Facebook. We can talk after all this is done.
Do you think they're following you on social media? They know you're on the radio right now?
I don't know. I told them.
Do you still have a legal office, right?
I do, yeah.
You know what would look really good in your office?
What's
have you
that?
Seen those sculptures up and down the Magnificent Mile? They're lighthouses.
Oh, yeah, those are cool.
No.
There are lighthouses right now. They've been erected by the lighthouse, you know, the it's a Magmile public art display, and this is to benefit the lighthouse of Chicago. And it would be wonderful, I think, if you bought one. I'm just saying.
Well, I'm going to be kind of strapped for cash after this.
But this serves
Bitcoin
the Chicago
payments.
Lighthouse serves people who are blind, visually okay. impaired, disabled, yeah. and veterans.
I think it's a good idea.
These are some really cool ones. They've got ones that salute the Chicago Blackhawks. There are some that the one with the Chicago Blackhawks features autographs from the current and past players. You know what? I think on your balcony, one of these lighthouses would look
there you
very
go.
Nice.
Yeah,
there's a lot.
They have a couple
points.
In Greektown that are really very cool too, with the Greek flag. You can get one. I can get one of those.
Okay,
you should get the hackers to buy one.
I was going
to
say
yeah.
maybe I could send
yes.
them one, and we could work out some deal.
Lighthouses make people mm-hmm. happy. You should get the hackers.
So you guys want a lighthouse?
Yeah.
Croatia or wherever you guys are.
Wherever you are.
48 of the lighthouses that have been part of the public art display will be available for online purchase. And you can put it in your office, as I said for Paul, maybe in your house, in your garden. They'll serve as a beacon of hope and opportunity. The themes encompass areas such as nautical, nature, and landscapes, and children. And you can go to, the phone number, let's see, to participate, go to bigpal.net/lighthouses. So BidPal is like one of these auction sites, and you can, you know, bid against other people, see how you're doing.
I'm going on now. I'm going to get one for our office.
Oh, I see. That's a good idea. Cool? WGN should have the Blackhawks one.
Yes.
We not have the Blackhawks lighthouse?
Yeah, we should.
Okay. All right.
It's amazing. And if you want to find even more information, it's lighthousesonmagmile.com.
Excellent.
That's another good spot, too.
We can expense that, right?
Sure.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if my silence gives you permission or my sort of like, if I sound like I've been coerced. That sounds like an interesting point to take up with the folks here at WG.
Don't they say it's easier to ask for forgiveness than permission?
Yeah, I've done that before. It didn't go well for me.
Okay, not so much.
Don't you put it on your taxes? Write it off that way?
Oh, there you go.
New system, it's charitable. Different. Charitable. About lighthouses, yeah.
Oh, great.
Charitable contribution. So again, it's bidpal.net/lighthouses. Otherwise, Michael, the other website for...
You can find it at lighthousesonmagmile.com.
And that's all to benefit Chicago Lighthouse. So thank you so much. It was great to meet these guys this morning. And I wanted to make sure I got that in there. I'm not sure if we'll have a chance to talk about it again, because I am leaving.
That's right.
Not right now.
Not permanently.
Yes. I'm gone. This is the longest I've ever taken off of WGN Radio in the entire time I've been here.
A long time. I'm
taking off tomorrow through the 20th for all, I guess.
Wow.
Really.
Yeah.
Because I'll be back on August 20th. And in between then, I'm going to be, I'm leaving for Dublin on Wednesday. Oddly enough, so is our boss. I'm not sure how that
happened. How funny
happened.
Is that?
It's you, very are you, strange.
I thought you guys were, you're leaving on the same day. You're going, but not same flight.
No.
We're not going together.
We got nervous. Not that it would be bad. No. But then it was going to start to look weird.
You don't want to go away with the boss.
No, I don't.
No.
I mean, I love you, Todd, but that would be so strange and awkward. He's taking his family to Ireland. We are stopping in Dublin on our way to, we're going to spend a day in Dublin, and then we're going to Wales. My son is a huge Doctor Who fan, so we're going to Cardiff, where they do a lot of the exteriors, and so we're kind of combining history and film locations, and then we're making our way to London. And,
I love London.
I like London, too. Yeah. I like even the airport in London.
Amazing.
I do, too.
You have to go see the Tower of London. That's so cool.
I agree. And I love Churchill's war rooms.
Oh,
and
nice.
So a lot of great
Soho.
Stuff.
Walk in Soho for a while.
You gotta eat some clotted cream.
I'm sorry, what?
Some clotted cream.
Clotted cream?
Yes. Slap it on a scone.
All right, I'm going to do that. I will take an Instagram of my clotted cream.
There you go.
Just for Esmeralda.
You will thank me.
Yeah.
Have you ever found anything when you were traveling that you've never been able to taste again? There's a sandwich that my husband and I loved in Dublin like 20 years ago when we were dating. And we've been trying to find, we don't know what the restaurant's name is. We don't know if it's still there. We can't even remember what it was that comprised.
What was the sandwich?
We don't know. We think it was some sort of, we think it was the jam and like a jam and almost sausage sandwich.
See, when I was in Paris, there was like, there was this, you're going to laugh, but I love mustard, and there's this mustard shop, and it was huge, and they make it with like Chardonnay, and it's just really a cool taste.
That sounds good.
I've never been able to find it anywhere
else. I can't make fun of you because of that, because when you find a good mustard.
Right?
Seriously,
it's not like as strong as a Dijon, but it's not as like I guess tart as a regular yellow mustard.
There's a Mean Mr. Mustard that's called it's called Mean Mr. Mustard, and it was really gross when I had it the first time, but then like it grew on us because we were so grossed out by it on a trip from U of I. We all went there and we're like, okay, we're gonna finish this whole bottle before we leave. We were on a spring break trip,
and you did,
and I don't think we did, but
Mr. Mean.
It was
Mr.
called
Mustard.
Mean Mr. Mustard.
Yeah.
I've never seen it since, but like it had the very distinct taste, very Parisian.
Oh,
maybe
see?
it was the last bottle, but this is like 1996.
Same one.
Look at that.
Yeah, it was a while ago. Then.
We said it had like a wine in it, like a Cabernet.
It did. It was a Chardonnay.
Chardonnay
taste to it.
Interesting.
Mm. Yeah, never been able to find it.
Well, we should message Jen Kramer because she is in Paris right now.
Yes, we'll
go to the mustard shop and
see if it's Mr. Mustard.
Right. Find my mustard.
I find it hard to believe that a mustard in Paris would be called Mean Mr. Mustard.
Well, maybe it translates well there because it's a Beatles song too. So maybe they did.
Madre.
That's it.
Señor.
Monsieur.
In France.
Say hey, and then when you go to the place, have Jen check, be like, do you guys sell in Sarasota, Florida? Because that's where it was at.
Mean Mr. Mustard?
Yeah, in 1990s. There, that's a song.
Mean Mr. Mustard? This is actually a song. Oh, what am I thinking, you guys? You're supposed to do your wrap-up. I'm sorry, the night got away from me. How was Lollapalooza? You were both there. Andrea and I and Esmeralda. You didn't go either, right?
No.
No.
I went.
And so I didn't realize, Andrea, you were mentioning some people are saying it was great. Other people are asking if it's sustainable.
Most of my cousins usually go. They went this year and I had half say it was awesome. It was great. It was the best ever. Bruno Mars just put on the greatest show. Jack White. Awesome, awesome, awesome. And then a couple other people I talked to said the attendance wasn't, you know, what it was the past couple of years. It just was kind of down. It was super hot, you know.
Really?
And maybe, I don't know, maybe.
But there were years that it rained and it was like muddy and sloppy. All right. So
I was just
gentlemen.
Curious what the guys thought.
All right. Michael, you take it away because you covered this for the station with sound sessions and interviews.
Yes, yes. It was a really interesting festival. This is my, I think, fourth year going. So I've had a limited amount of time spent with Lollapalooza. Obviously, everybody from the suburbs and their moms and dads are all going to be there. Lots of interesting artists.
Yeah, I was
artists.
Called dad three times.
You were not.
No.
I was.
Were you really? I mean, that would have
not
been
this year.
No. Maybe next year, Paul. I walked around with Paul pretending to be my dad, actually. That
was pretty awesome.
Lot of really
did that get
time.
Weird?
Yeah, it got a little bit weird. It was, you know, but the thing is that I found really interesting was that a lot of the artists and the journalists are today, especially music journalists, are saying that it's not rock-based anymore. We miss the days when it used to be really heavily rock-based where people would come in with their guitars, but that's not the kind of music that people are listening to these days, and it's definitely not the kind of people who they're trying to sell the tickets to. So you'd see a lot more EDM artists or pop music artists like The Weeknd or Bruno Mars. Or
hey, Paul, what's an EDM artist? Do you know what that
electric
is?
Dance music.
Okay, I'm sorry. Right. Go ahead. Go ahead,
electronica.
Michael. Yes. Okay. Yes. Carry on. I'm sorry.
Electronic dance music. So you'd see a lot of those stages. There's Perry's stage. Perry Farrell.
Perry Farrell.
Yes. Yes.
Jane's Addiction.
Yes.
No. Nope.
Jane's
out.
Addiction, one of the first bands that was at Lollapalooza.
Yes.
Now can't even.
The founder.
Even, yeah, the founder can't even get his own band on the set list these days.
Well, they were there last year. I saw that they did Jane's Addiction. They did the whole album. Yeah.
I think you were the only person in that audience, Paul.
I saw Ario Speedwagon one time.
It was lightly attended. But I heard from Jim Ryan that Bruno Mars on Friday was the most crowded he's ever seen for any show, including The Killers last year or 2 years ago when that was the hugest. But I agree with you. The other shows, and I saw the pictures you had, was a lot lower than... And last year, Chance the Rapper was pretty crowded, too.
Chance the Rapper. Okay, so I saw Paul McCartney a few years ago.
Yeah,
I thought that was pretty heavily intense. Chance the Rapper blew that. It doubled it almost.
Yes.
I remember Chance the Rapper had so many people come. When you would get your tickets, he had his own guest list spot for how many people that he had.
No. Yeah,
so
it was packed in that area.
Did you guys see
so
Post Malone?
I heard it was packed for that, too.
Yeah, I had seen pictures.
Packed for Post Malone. That's another artist who just...
LL Cool J's was pretty crowded too for a daytime spot.
Yeah, LL was big as well.
I saw that.
See, and I heard now.
You know LL Cool J, Patty.
Was he the one that was on Law and Order?
Yes.
Okay.
No.
No? Which one was?
Ice Cube, right?
That's Ice Cube.
Yeah.
Ice T.
LL Cool J was on.
Was he in that shark movie with.
America's Got Talent.
Okay. He was in that shark movie.
Home Improvement.
He was in Deep Blue Sea.
Deep Blue Sea.
Going Back to Cali.
Yes.
Going Back to Cali. I'm going to Knock You Out.
Oh, I know that song.
Said, knock you out.
Yeah.
I agree with.
How was that?
I agree
did you see his performance?
Yeah, I saw LL Cool J's. There was a lot of. It was cool. It was cool. It was like nostalgic. Everyone like in my demographic was there. Some of them with their kids.
Yeah.
But I agree with what Michael said a lot. This is the first year that I didn't know. I've gone to Lolla over 10 times. It's like the one trip. I used to love Lollapalooza. It's a great weekend. And it's great to see bands that you've heard of. But this time I hadn't heard of almost 75% of the bands, and it was really weird. And I'm kind of on top of music scene. And,
but did you enjoy the performances?
I enjoyed the performances I saw. A lot of bands were ending before their times. So like I would schedule, I'm like, all right, I'll catch the last 15 minutes. And you'd show up, and they were done like really early.
And the way the stages are set up, is there any bleed from like one stage, or is it
a little bit
pretty,
but
well?
Not only for like the softer sounding bands, but like, okay, the only time when Paul McCartney played, who was he playing against, Michael, on the other side? Was it like Arcade Fire or someone crazy?
No, he was playing against an EDM artist. I think it wasn't Cascade, it was another huge
and you could hear it during his set a little
and
bit.
And he made mention of it on stage. Yeah, I think that was about 3 years.
But that's
ago.
Only like softer stuff that would be affected.
That bleeds through.
By the way, LL Cool J is on NCIS, so he is on a procedural show right now. So I was kind of
Ice-T was on from, Law and Order.
Getting your rappers mixed up.
Yes, I was getting my rappers mixed up. Which one's married to the blonde woman and they had the reality show?
Ice-T.
Okay, I was just wondering. That's all.
And also, LL Cool J hosts a lot of events too. Okay. I've seen him on that.
He's very charismatic.
Yeah, I like him. He licks his lips a lot.
So do I. I chew my lips. But no one needed to know that. I apologize, everyone involved. Esmeralda, but yes, go ahead.
The after parties were really good, too.
Oh,
Michael
wait,
and
you went
I
to
saw,
after parties?
Yeah, there's an after show. Greta Van Fleet played, and then Jack White played it at Metro from the White Stripes.
Cool.
I didn't go to that.
Metro.
But
Mike, did you have more fun at the after parties than you did at Lala?
The cool thing about the after parties is for bands that can't really take on that kind of open air festival sound, the after parties are great because you see your favorite bands in the smallest venues with your best buddies right next to you, so it's a great
Can you just go and get in?
No, tickets sold out
they
a
sell
long
out
time.
So
like
fast.
With the, Jack White's tickets sold out in 10 minutes at the Metro, and he played 3 hours, and he said it was like the best night of his life. And anyone that went to that show, you take your phones when you walk in, so everyone. So you can't take pictures, no selfies.
What do you do with the phones?
They just put them in those pouches.
Oh, I hate that so much.
But everyone that did experience it was upset about it. But my friends who did it, they're like, actually, it made the experience way better.
Well, that's true, because you're focused on the music and the performance instead of like zooming in and taking pictures. Yeah,
exactly.
I'd rather zoom in.
But they probably come out green anyway, right? Yeah.
What constitutes a band that can't take on the outdoor festival? Is it just the sound or the...
So, in my opinion, yeah, it is exactly. It's the sound. So, if you're seeing a rock band like this Greta Van Fleet, who is basically Led Zeppelin reincarnate as 19-year-olds, they can't... Their sound doesn't really quantify the kind of, you know, visceral rock and roll that you want, that you'd find in a small club. So, when I heard it was just lost in everyone talking and smoking, and I was like, I can't get the same kind of feeling, because it was just the power of the speakers can't get into your face. However, Riot Fest uses a specific type of speaker that kind of centers in on the audience, and they can bring the rock to it.
That's what I'm asking.
I've been to Riot Fest.
Oh, yeah. So, I was wondering if the equipment.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Would you go back?
If I liked the band. I think Riot Fest has some really good bands lately. I saw Joan Jett there.
Oh,
a few years ago, yeah, with Stephanie.
As you've been to Riot Fest too, right?
I haven't. I always do see the lineup, and I'm more inclined to want to go to Riot Fest.
Yeah,
rather than Lollapalooza.
They have good bands.
Interesting.
Not that Lala doesn't, but Lollapalooza.
Yeah, it's a different style. Like I think Riot Fest has been recognized as getting more and more getting better every year, while a lot of people complain about the Lollapalooza lineup.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Riot Fest is what Lollapalooza used to be, so they just kind of flip-flopped in that way. And you can see a lot of great artists, Elvis Costello, Incubus, Young the Giant, Interpol, Blondie, Alkaline Trio,
Blondie.
Jerry Lee Lewis.
What? Oh, yeah. Jerry Lee Lewis?
Yeah.
He was supposed to be at a festival when I was a kid. He never showed up. We waited for like an hour and a half outside. No.
Great balls of fire.
Yeah.
We need to take a break. I'm trying to think of other festivals I've gone to, but I'm a lot of music I'm trying to see at a festival. I was at the Show Me Festival in Missouri. I saw Train.
There you go.
I almost jumped into a truck with that.
I like the face you make. We're like, I saw Train. Like,
I saw Train.
All right, you win.
I saw Train.
Not a contest.
Right.
I saw Train.
Give us a call. Tell us something good. What's making you smile tonight? What makes you happy? 312-981-7200. We'd love to hear from you. More in a moment on the Patty Vasquez Show with Andrea Darles when we come back on 720 WGN.